Now, thirdly, the episode of the untimely flowers. And this episode took place in the Sala Grove near Kusinara. This episode took place, as did the succeeding episode, between the twin Sala trees. So let us try to visualize the scene. 2,500 years ago. I've already mentioned the Malas, these tribal people, these republican folk, in whose territory Kusinara was situated. The Malas had planted two rows of Sala trees. Two parallel rows of Sala trees. And these two rows of Sala trees ran parallel to each other from east to west, or if you like, from west to east. And at the eastern end of the two rows, in between the last two trees, was a kind of platform or couch. And this platform or couch was apparently used by the Mullahs for their meetings. But on this couch, the Buddha lay down, with his head to the north and his feet to the south. And we're told that he lay down, as he usually did, on his right side. So that inasmuch as his head was to the north and his feet were to the south, and he was lying on his right side, he would be facing west. And he'd be looking right down through the great avenue of Sala trees. So if you'd come up this avenue, you would have seen the Buddha lying across in between the last two Sala trees, right at the very end. So this must have been a very impressive scene, a very impressive sight on that occasion. And incidentally, we should notice that the Buddha passed away in the open air. Not only that, according to tradition, the Buddha was born in the open air. He gained enlightenment in the open air. And he often taught in the open air. In other words, the Buddha, all his life, lived very close to nature. In fact, we may say that at that time in India, it was very difficult to get away from nature. The greater part of India was covered by dense forest, and the population was still comparatively small. People lived in cities and in villages built in small clearings in the dense surrounding jungle. And one mustn't forget this fact when studying, when reading the Pali scriptures. Now, while the Buddha was lying there on this couch between the twin Sala trees, something strange happened. The Buddha himself drew Ananda's attention to it. And I'll quote the exact words of the Pali text. Then said the Exalted One to the Venerable Ananda, "See, Ananda, all abloom are the twin Sala trees. With untimely blossoms do they shower down upon the body of the Tathagata. They sprinkle it, cover it up, in worship of the Tathagata. Moreover, heavenly frankincense comes falling from the sky, showers down upon the body of the Tathagata, sprinkles it, and covers it up, in worship of the Tathagata. And heavenly music sounds in the sky, in worship of the Tathagata. And heavenly songs are wafted from the sky, in worship of the Tathagata. Yet not thus is the Tathagata truly honored, revered, respected, worshipped, and deferred to. Whosoever, Ananda, be he brother or sister, or lay brother or lay sister, whosoever dwells in the fulfillment of the Dhamma, both in its greater and in its lesser duties, whosoever walks uprightly in accordance with the Dhamma. He it is that truly honors, reveres, respects, worships, and defers to the Tathagata in the perfection of worship. So this seems quite straightforward. The sum and substance of the matter seems to be that true worship of the Buddha consists in the practice of his teaching. But there's a danger here of misunderstanding. The passage quoted seems to fit in only too well, only too neatly, with our rationalistic way of thinking, our rationalistic presuppositions. The passage seems to be saying that offering flowers, lights, candles, that's unnecessary. But this is not really the case. This is not really what the passage is saying. It's true, offering flowers, etc., is not by any means, not at all, a substitute for the actual practice of the Buddha's teaching. That is to say, the practice of sila, the practice of samadhi, the practice of prajna. But this does not mean that we should not offer those flowers. Offering flowers is an expression of devotion. It strengthens devotion. And if we don't feel devotion, we probably will not practice the teaching anyway. We must also remember whom the Buddha was addressing. He was addressing Ananda. And Ananda seems to have been an emotional rather than an intellectual type of person. And perhaps he was sometimes carried away by his feelings. So he needed to be reminded that feelings were not everything, not even devotional feelings. But our position, I need hardly remind you, is quite different, is very different. We often find it quite easy to understand the Dharma. We even find it easy to practice it, to a limited extent, up to a point. But we find it very difficult, many of us, to experience strong devotional feelings. Some of us hardly know what devotional feelings are. They're just things we hear about, which we read about. So sooner or later, our spiritual life comes to a halt, comes to a stop, or at least it stagnates very badly. So we, unlike perhaps Ananda, unlike those salutaries, we need to offer all the flowers that we can, even great armfuls of them if possible. So we should not take this passage as inculcating a purely rationalistic attitude to spiritual life.